Hey everybody, before we start this week's episode, I just wanted to give a little brief apology. Listening back on the audio, I'm editing right now, and the audio for this week is a little rough. I'm not sure why it is so much rougher this week than it has been. This week I was actually in town on good Wi-Fi, so I'm not sure why it's rough. But if I have to pop in at random times as editor Danielle and apologize or re-record some things as me after the fact, I apologize. I know it's not going to sound the best this week, and we're talking about one of the best movies, so I still hope you sit through all of it to hear the discussions that we had, because it was so much fun to talk about this movie. All right, let's get to it. Everybody, welcome back to Banterbox, a review podcast run by the team here at Mad Artists. Each week, we will be reviewing a different production, whether it's a movie, TV show, whatever we're feeling like. And this week, we watched The Truman Show. My name is Danielle, and here are the Mad Artists that I have with me to help break this down today.
Hey, everyone, it's Samuel.
Yo, it's Russell.
What's up, guys? It's me, Tyler.
It's John Boy, boy, baby.
It's John Boy, boy, baby, boy. Let's go.
That's the only way you could ever introduce yourself. John John Boy Boy Baby. All right. So,
I was just going to say, careful not to get sued, because there's a big company called John Boy. So be careful not to get sued by calling yourself that.
I'm sure they're going to listen to this episode and think that we're stealing their identity. I'm sure that's going to happen.
I have their lawyers on standby.
No, it is not. We can't say that.
If I get sued by John Boy, I'm going to consider that accomplishment. Because that means a big company noticed me, and that's what I
care. I feel seen.
Who's blowing up my phone? Is that their lawyers? Guys.
Oh, wow. Hey, thanks. Like, yeah, just super complimented by it.
Oh, yeah. I've given anybody who contacts us trying to sue us your number, Tyler.
Thanks. As a business
manager. I mean, you have enough experience with it. You can get us out of it, right?
That's very true. That's very true. For those who don't know, apparently I'm a white-collar criminal, so.
Just a member of the mob. Yeah. All right. Well, getting back to why we're here. I know I had seen this before. Who else had and who else had not seen this before?
I had not seen it before.
This is my third time seeing this movie. It was
my second time. Yeah. Johnny Boy.
I had actually seen the very last clip of the movie, but I've never actually seen that movie the whole way through.
Gotcha. I saw it. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, the last phrase I've heard multiple times before, like quoted, and I've seen that last clip a few times, but the whole movie itself, no, I hadn't seen it before then.
No, the first time I saw this movie and it got to that ending part where he just goes, "In case I don't see ya," I was wrecked. I was like, yeah. That is the craziest exit you could have made, and also the hardest roast on on Kristoff as you leave, that Seriously. You use the catchphrase you came up with to be like, nah, I'm leaving this shit. Like, no, I thought it was so funny.
Wait, John, what was the quote?
Write it down.
In case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Oh, that's weird. I thought it was,
I want your blood.
Oh my.
I'm slipping God. That into every single podcast.
I mean, I can't be mad about it. I'm the one who sent him the audio file, so this, I did this to myself.
Yeah, and what you're hearing right now is our
dog.
Yeah, Frosty freaking out in the other room. Frosty!
It's because he heard my voice and he's like, unacceptable, I told you I hate him.
Okay, well...
unacceptable in the public interest.
Oh boy, we got some energy today going on. Well, yeah, the first time I saw this movie, I know we had talked about this previously, but the first time I saw it was just randomly. Me and my friends were just flipping through Netflix and we saw a Jim Carrey movie that we had heard of, but knew absolutely nothing about, The Truman Show. And we were like, oh, let's just give it a shot. And one of my friends was very disinterested on her phone the whole time, trying to get us to like change the movie and being like, this isn't that fun. And me and my other friend who were actually paying attention were like, if you pick up the remote and change this movie, you're not our friend anymore. Like, it was so good. We were enjoying it so much.
Quick shout outs to Amy and Kelsey.
Quick shout outs to my friends, Amy and Kelsey. But yeah, that was the only time I'd ever seen it. Well, that's a lie. So I guess it is the third time, because then I made somebody else watch it like the next week. So this would also be my third time. How did you... seen it? Yes, he has seen it. How did you get exposed to it, Russell?
I mean, for me, it was just one of those random situations where I was just like, oh, it's late at night. You know, I was still with my parents at the time, and I was like, oh, let's just, like, you know, find, like, a Jim Carrey movie. And I just, like, you know, oh, Jim Carrey, The Truman Show, cool. And I was like, awesome. Like, this is going to be funny. Like, it's going to be, like, a fun, good time. And then cut to 20 minutes in when I'm just, like, glued to the TV, like, this is the best movie I've ever seen.
It's just so crazy. And I love that it really doesn't let up throughout the entire thing. I love it so much.
It's funny that you mentioned that. One of my biggest things about watching it, which for me, it was the first time seeing this movie. Spoiler alert, it's fantastic. and it's beyond reproach because it's very good objectively. Mm-hmm. But the cool, one of the things that I actually really appreciated was the pacing. I went into the movie excited to watch it, but objectively very tired. But the movie like grips you from the very beginning and just takes you on the ride. And I thought it was paced perfectly.
That is not a long movie. It's right at like an hour 20.
Yeah. It's not super long. Yeah.
It comes in, it sets the premise, it makes its point, and then it leaves. And I actually really respect that.
I think as far as pacing goes, it's one of the best movies we've seen on the podcast as far as pacing goes.
It's really They were just so intuitive with it. Like, they knew exactly when they needed to kind of linger. And even when they did linger, it wasn't for long, and it would usually end up with some sort of, like, twist in the scene.
Yes.
Like, the only linger moments I can really think of are when he is sitting in the kitchen with Meryl after his whole big meltdown, and they just have that slow moment of like, you can't stand me though, you know, and that whole kind of thing. But then it picks up immediately.
Yeah.
And then there's the scene with him and Marlon, where Marlon is like, you know, talking to him about how he's been his friend for forever and is reminding him of all these good memories. But then you see that Christoph is actually feeding it all.
Feeding all of his lines.
It's so good.
It breaks, it's just so smart. It's so well done.
It hurts
to watch. Like,
yeah. Very much so.
I took so many notes on this movie because I just had so many thoughts. Like, I wrote down so much stuff in my notes that I wanted to mention. So we'll get to it. But this one came out in 1998. It was directed by Peter Weir and written by Andrew Niccol. And it stars Jim Carrey as Truman Burbank and Ed Harris as Christoph. You can watch this with a Hulu or HBO Max subscription, or you can buy or rent it on Vudu, Apple TV, Google Play, Prime Video, or YouTube. And the IMDb summary for this says, an insurance salesman discovers his whole life is actually a reality TV show. And to Samuel.
Alrighty, so our director and our writer, neither of them have really done a lot of stuff. They don't have extensive filmographies, but our director, Peter Weir, he has a pretty good filmography, even though it's not long.
Hey, everybody. Sorry, our audio got a little bit funky here when Sam started talking about Peter Weir's most well-known works, so I'm just going to fill in for the first part of it, and then he can take it away. He was just saying that he has directed Gallipoli, Dead Poets Society, which is a great one, Green Card, and Fearless, in addition to what he's about to talk about.
Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World, which I will make you watch. It's a Russell Crowe movie. You will love it.
It's good.
I want to see it.
Yeah, we might should do it for the podcast at some point.
Well, put it in the hat if you want to do it.
I might put it in the hat.
Yeah.
It's objectively like one of the best movies I've ever seen.
It's very good.
I love that movie.
I need to put Gladiator in the hat too.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
That movie.
All the Russell Crowe. And then our writer, Andrew Niccol, this was, I believe, his second credit ever. So like, good on him. Although I did see, and this may be in your fun facts, but I did also see that even though Andrew Niccol was the writer, that Jim Carrey actually wrote a lot of his own dialogue.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Well, that was something that I saw that I don't think I wrote down, was that Jim Carrey and I guess the writer and director would sometimes like have, not like beef, but a little bit of strife, just because Jim Carrey had so many like ideas and thoughts about his character and like what he would actually do. And so a lot of times they would argue and then they would see what Jim Carrey wanted to do happen. And they would be like, you're right. That's better. Jim Carrey would just do it and they'd be like, okay, yeah, that's better. We're going to go with that.
But yeah, so his biggest credits are the sci-fi film Gattaca, Simone with Al Pacino, Lord of War, The Host, and Anon.
Which, oh boy, The Host.
I haven't heard of any of those movies. That's, again, Frosty on the pod.
Yeah, Frosty just saying hello. It's so rough that he ended up doing The Host later after doing this masterpiece. That just makes me so upset that he clearly went downhill after a while.
Is it that bad?
I genuinely, and there are problems with the book, I recognize that, but I actually liked the book. It was an interesting concept. I read it forever ago, and both of my parents read it. And my dad, knowing that the author was Stephanie Meyer, was like, this is just going to be like, you know, some Twilight crap and, you know, whatever, whatever. But he read it, and he actually went to me afterwards and was like, this is one of the best books I've read in a long time. Like, this is a good book. And so I was excited about the movie, and then it was bad. Samuel.
Oof.
How much noise can you be making?
I'm hungry, okay.
Sam's playing a game of how much can I assault our listeners' ears with crinkle sounds.
Welcome back to the ASMR part. Yeah, I was just going to say, welcome back to ASMR with Samuel.
ASMR with Mad Artists.
Stop! Do not do Mad Artists. Do not do that to them. It's awful.
Hi.
Oh my God.
Hi. Welcome back. I'm going to be opening...
A bag of chips. This is going to be just the Danielle show from now on. No one's allowed to guest. No one's allowed to do anything. It's just me.
What do you think the IMDb score is, Danielle? I don't know. Well, I think...
I don't know, Danielle. 10 out of 10.
Yeah,
So a weird thing about this plot, before we kind of get into it, is the way it is written, I'm okay with the way it's written, because it starts out... framing the reality of, you know, Truman's whole world. And then it kind of goes into, like, the plot of the movie within that reality. Yeah. So the whole first part is, like, actually talking about what's happening to Truman actually. And then it dives into sort of how he discovers that. So do y'all have any, like, just overarching stuff you want to go into before I jump in with this?
So I have one thing that I thought of yesterday that I want to do as a fun little game.
Okay.
I know the answer for me, but if all of our lives were the Truman Show,
ooh,
what would your biggest product placement investor be?
Oh.
Like, mine's obvious. Mine would be Mountain Dew.
Yours would be Mountain Dew.
Mountain Dew would make question. A off of me.
Oh, mine would
so
mine
painfully
be,
Mountain Dew.
Mine would be Milo's Sweet Tea.
Yep.
Ooh.
For sure.
This is a good question. Because my biggest thing, like, I go out of my way to not be tied to, like, brands and stuff. Like, none of my shirts, like, I don't wear a lot of clothing that has, like, a specific brand. I try and keep everything.
I would probably have two things. I would have a whole bunch of, like, different, like, craft beer ads. Like, I mean, a Red Hair Brewing, like... A New Realm, just a whole bunch of stuff, like, and then aside from that, like, as far as like brand, like, that I really stick to, maybe Vans.
Oh yeah,
like, but like, those are probably my two biggest, because I really do stick
to
those.
Gonna say craft beer would be like, yeah, I think, yeah, the biggest one.
That'd
for
be
you.
So many, like, oh, like, here's the, watch Truman drink this new craft beer from
Monday
beer.
Night over here, like, yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you what, I know what mine is.
Okay.
I'm a huge tea whore, and I start my morning every single day with a delineation of some kind of black Teavana tea. I get really into it because it's part of the ritual. So it's like, you make the tea and like you dramatically like smell like the steam kind of coming off of the coffee cup, and you're just like, ah, can't wait to start my morning with some Teavana Earl Grey Crème black tea. And then just, yeah, that's mine.
Delicious.
All right, John.
John, your go.
I use a bunch of stuff in my day-to-day life. Product placement, probably the Dollar Beard Club.
I was trying to think of what you normally get from like QT.
Yeah.
So he'd have the big brand product placement with Coca-Cola. That's interesting though. I'm glad you said that. I mean, yours was the easiest one by far.
Oh, it was so painfully easy for you.
It would make bank off of how much Mountain Dew you would willingly drink on that show. Does anyone else have any other thoughts they want to throw in before I jump in here?
Right before we start, I just want to say one thing really quick. I'll leave you with this.
Oh my God.
I just want to address two things with names in this movie, because names are like weirdly like
important. No one of them you're going to say.
Well, but because the fact that Truman's name is Truman, which is true man.
Yeah.
Which is like a play on words of like him being like a real person in like a, in a world that's fabricated.
Yeah. He's an everyman.
Yeah. And his last name is Burbank because the shot takes place in Burbank. Like that's where the dome is.
Really?
Yep.
Oh,
Burbank, nice.
Burbank, California.
I didn't know that, but that's
and
cool.
And then the second thing that I noticed with names is the fact that Christoph's name has Christ in it, and there are a lot of moments
get out of here
where he is like deified as like almost like a god, like as like a father figure.
Get well, out of here.
The whole thing. Yeah. Like I wrote that down. Just all these different thoughts that I had to write them all down. Yeah. Because it was just crazy and the stuff I'm going to point out.
I didn't even think that about that. That's awesome.
Was that he was literally just playing God,
yep,
like
100%.
Around this whole person's
100%.
Life. Yeah, but let's get into it. So first, just describing his situation. So Truman Burbank is the unsuspecting star of The Truman Show, a reality television program filmed 24/7 through thousands of hidden cameras and broadcast to a worldwide audience. Christoph, the show's creator and executive producer, seeks to capture Truman's authentic emotions and give audiences a relatable everyman. As Truman was selected from birth following an unwanted pregnancy, Christoph claims that Truman came to be adopted not just by the show, but by the world, which is just, as I was watching, I was like, wait, is he, I had forgotten, like, if he had actually, like, you know, been a child first in the world, or if they had gotten him from birth. I had totally forgotten.
No, yeah.
And when they were
just showed the whole time.
Yeah. And yeah. They were describing it, and I was just like, that is so awful.
It's so creatively despicable.
Child. Like,
it's demented.
It's so messed up. And like, it's like the whole world is in on this inside joke about this child that's just come into the world.
Yeah.
And they're just like, yeah, we're just going to like kind of mess with this kid and like build a fake world and just like prank him basically. Like, what if it was a fake show instead of a reality show?
Prank. It's just a prank, bro.
Get pranked.
I absolutely adore that element because, like, I really feel like it holds a lens up to, like, like Western society, like big time. It's like, hey, we're committing a huge crime against humanity by doing this to this human being, and you all are complicit in watching it, and you guys are just turning your heads. You all know what's going on. You all know what's taking place. You all know that we're deliberately fooling this individual. And you're all complicit in it. And it's just, oh my God, I absolutely adore that it's kind of directly in the face of that kind of like Western idealism of, you know, we don't really care what happens behind the scenes as long as we get our entertainment or we get our convenience or whatever. And I freaking love that.
Yeah, that was something I was looking at is when you have Christoph playing God like he is, it brings up like a whole conversation about the idea of like free will and, you know, what goes into, I guess, just a human life, you know, how much control you actually have over your own actions. And like the whole time I was just thinking like this opens up so many crazy like philosophical and like just so many different conversations, because it also brings up the idea of, you know, he looks at Truman not as his child or as this, that, and the other. He looks at Truman and the whole Truman Show as art, and so that's why he cares so much more about the art than about the actual person inside. And it just like it's so crazy. The whole time I kept, you know, writing down like art versus like, you know, humanity. Like, where is that line? Like, where is the line between that? Because people talk all the time about having, you know, true reactions, real reactions, you know, where is the line between, you know, a real person and the art that you're seeing?
Yeah.
And this, like, blurs that line just so crazily. I love it. It's so insane. But moving on with the description here. So Truman's hometown of Sea Haven Island is a complete set built with an enormous dome populated by crew members and actors who highlight the product placements that generate revenue for the show. The elaborate set allows Kristoff to control almost every aspect of Truman's life, including the weather. To prevent Truman from discovering his false reality, Kristoff manufactures scenarios that dissuade Truman's desire for exploration, such as the death of his father in a sea storm to instill aquaphobia, and by constantly broadcasting and printing messages of the dangers of traveling and the virtues of staying home. That's just so
messed up.
Brilliant. You're just gaslighting this guy.
Let's give this kid PTSD to keep him in our, like, slave encampment.
Yeah, dude, like, you see how deep that has gone with him when he, like, just sees the boat half sunk into the water, and you know Kristoff planted it there.
Right.
He just planted that boat there and was like, that'll be enough. That'll keep him from getting on the boat.
Yeah, so, because he's already nervous.
Yes. And so he goes up and he sees it and he like has like a panic moment and just ends up turning around and being like, nope, not going to do it.
And that whole thing was a test because that wasn't even something that he wanted to go do himself. That was something that his boss told him to go do. Mm-hmm. So it was Kristoff testing him, essentially.
It was Kristoff reinstilling what he had already like programmed into his brain.
It's so smart. It's so like it's so evil. Creepy. It's dastardly. It's despicable. It's all of those things. But like the writing team for this movie had to sit down and come up with that, and it's brilliant.
So crazy. It's so messed up. Especially like when he is, you know, driving with Meryl and he gets to that bridge and you see him like having another like panic attack, and she's just like so condescending in her voice with like, you know, you can't drive over water.
Yeah.
Let's just go home. And he finds a way around it.
Drive.
I just thought that was so crazy and funny. And I loved it. Where he was just like, you know what? Nah, we're going to do it anyway.
Absolutely incredible.
Oh, so good. However, Kristoff cannot predict all of, I hate you, Samuel. I hate you. Open your Sour Patch Kids.
I was trying to do it quick.
You waited until I was just starting a sentence, and then you ripped it open.
Today's episode of Banter Box is brought to you by Sour Patch Kids.
Nobody, we don't get free sponsorship.
No.
Don't eat them sponsored. Unless we explicitly tell you to.
Oh my god.
Sour Patch Kids, we're looking for money.
Chaos is happening right now, and I'm so confused.
Well, I'm going to keep going. Kristoff cannot predict all of Truman's actions. During his college years, Truman was intended to fall in love with and marry co-student Meryl, but fell for Sylvia, an extra. Although Sylvia was quickly removed from the show before she could disclose its nature to Truman, her memory has remained with him, who secretly dreams of a life with Sylvia outside of his marriage to Meryl. To this end, he seeks to travel to Fiji, where he was told Sylvia's family moved. In the real world, Sylvia is part of the Free Truman campaign, which fights to have Truman released from the program, which I'm all for the Free Truman campaign.
Like, yeah,
I'm
seriously.
So here for it. No, I love that whole thing because it had been a really long time since I watched this movie. So obviously, I remembered the general gist. You know, I remembered certain parts. I had, like, not totally remembered Sylvia. When she popped up, I was like, oh, I forgot about this part.
It's like, such a good, like thing. Like, it's, like, the one real thing that Truman ever, like, actually had.
Yes.
So, like, it was so important to him. Like, so important.
Him recreating her face with, like, the magazine photos is
that
so
broke
cool.
my heart. It broke my
it's
heart,
so freaking sad.
Yeah. Because you see that he's trying so hard to just see her face, and specifically to remember it.
Right.
He's like... He's like, I don't want to forget what the one real girl looks like. Like, he's sitting there, like, piecing it together. It's not even, like, creepy when he does it. It's just so genuine of, like, I'm trying to remember. Like, I've got to piece it together just right so that I can look at her. And, like, that was it. Like, I loved it so much.
Which is impressive from the filmmaking standpoint because the action of doing that is dripping with creepiness. Like, that's a horrible, like, don't do that. But the way he did it was very, like... is almost charming in a way.
It was
sad.
It was. Like it was just sad. It wasn't creepy. It wasn't him, you know, like, you know, trying to do some weird crap with it. It was literally him just being like, I think about her all the time. I want to recreate like something that I can see. I want to actually be able to like take it in, you know?
Yeah.
I can't get her face out of my head, but like, I can't remember the details.
Exactly. So he's like, I have to piece together these details. But I that just broke my heart. Every time he would look at that, and you, especially when you would see Silvio like watching the TV where he's doing that.
Yeah.
And you'd see just like, she's so happy that like he remembers her and cares for her that much.
She still has like her sweater and he's like smelling
yes,
it.
Yes. He's still like, but again, that's something that could be creepy if it wasn't perfectly performed.
Right.
And Jim Carrey just did it so perfectly that it's not creepy when he does it. It's just like, aw, like yeah. Poor guy. Like you feel bad for him instead of like, ugh, don't do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you're
like,
immediately sympathetic to it.
Yeah, because it's just like, and I think it's also, like you said, it's also kudos to the writers for putting him in this world where, like, you know, he is so innocent to all of that.
Right.
And so, like, it's just, you don't feel like it's creepy because you're just like, oh, this is his only connection to the outside world. It's so sad that it's gripped him so hard and he can't have it back.
Right.
Like, yeah, it's just, ugh, it gets me, man. I love it.
It's amazing.
It's just so good. So this is where it kind of goes more into the actual, like, plot out, like, within the situation. So as the show approaches its 30th anniversary, Truman begins discovering unusual elements such as a spotlight falling out of the sky in front of his house and a radio channel that precisely describes his movements. These events are punctuated by the reappearance of his father, who had infiltrated the set as a beggar. Truman begins questioning his life and realizes that the city somehow revolves around him. Meryl's stress from attempting to uphold the charade in the face of Truman's growing skepticism and hostility causes their marriage to deteriorate, to the point where, one day, Truman takes Meryl by surprise by going on an impromptu road trip, but increasingly implausible emergencies block their way. And it's so crazy. Like, I was so impressed watching how fast Christoph can just like send 200 people with all of this equipment, have effects to make it look like something is on fire or doing this thing. Like, yeah. It's so crazy how he said, you know, in his little like snippet interview that it was the population of like a country living inside the dome.
Yeah.
And it's just, oh my goodness, it's so insane.
Yeah.
I was watching and I was just like, the fact that you, And when you see all of that, it brings into perspective Christoph's own kind of madness with it, is that he has poured his entire life and soul and everything into this, like, piece of artwork. And so his whole, like, motivation, it makes sense from his point. Like, it's not just, like, I'm the bad guy doing bad things. It's like, I have literally poured my entire life into this. And if I don't give it my all and send 600 people to go solve this problem right now, then I lose it.
Yeah, then he's gonna figure out the truth, and yeah. then he's gonna demand to let go. He's to be let go, and I have to do that.
Something.
Which is, oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Basically, something that was also really, really a brilliant example of nonverbal storytelling was there was a bit. I can't remember the specifics, but it was really late into the evening when Truman was trying to basically fake his escape when they lost him. By faking falling asleep, but he actually snuck out. When they like immediately they phoned the showrunner and he just shows up in his pajamas, which speaks to the fact that that Christoph literally lives there and lives and sleeps there, which is just that little bit of nonverbal storytelling. It's like, no, like this is just as much Christoph's life as it is Truman, which is which is like a really dark parallel, but I love it.
Well, yeah, you know, it's something I started to realize that, you know, both of these men are experiencing their own type of, like, madness and have been driven mad by each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a matter of, you know, whose final wishes are going to actually be carried out. Yeah. It's just a matter of who's going to win the final, like, battle of wills, basically. Yeah. But, yeah, that's just so crazy to me. I just love this movie so much. It's so fantastic. But so during an argument in which Truman determines that Meryl is part of the conspiracy and holds her at knife point, she breaks character and is taken off the show. For good reason. She had a knife to her throat.
Yeah.
Well, not just that, but like imagine like that feeling of like being like married. Like, I mean, you know, like whether or not like the marriage was like legitimate, I have no idea.
Yeah, no clue.
But like, imagine that feeling of being an actor and like auditioning like for this like important role to be in the Truman Show when you're 17, you know, like years old.
And that's your life.
And then yeah. you move into the dome and then you're living with a man and you know that you're on TV all the time. You're always performing. And like, essentially they don't even like each other.
No,
they don't.
Like he addresses it. He's like, you can't stand me. Like, why are we doing this?
She is so fake. Like her smiles mm-hmm. are so fake. You know, like it looks so painfully like
fake. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is intentional, of course.
Yeah.
Like I mean, it's great.
And also it's her madness of she's been married and living with this man that she can't stand for who knows how long. And you have to wonder, like, you know, yeah, she's being paid, but she can't even, like, go out and use that money to live her own life. She lives every day in here.
Right.
Like, you know, who is she supporting someone outside and that's why she's doing this? Like, you know, what? Like, we don't know. I want more of Meryl's story. I want to know what's going on with her.
This movie, psychological thriller, changed my mind.
No, it is. Like, straight
very
up.
Much so. Very much so.
It's so psychological. I'm so fascinated by Meryl and her like background. I wish I knew more about like what's going on with her, which I'm sure she had one that we just didn't get to see because that was something that was really important to Peter Weir. Is he told basically every character and even most of the extras, give yourself a backstory of like why you're here, how long you've been here. Like, you know, what have you experienced specifically with Truman? Like all this kind of stuff. Like he was like, I want everyone to have like specific feelings toward Truman one way or another. Like, you know, which I just think is so cool. But gotta find my place because I lost it. Okay. Hoping to bring Truman back to a controllable state, Christoph reintroduces Truman's father to the show properly under the guise of having lost his memory after the boating accident, which is the most soap opera thing.
Yeah,
very intentionally.
It reminds me of in Friends when Joey's on Days of Our Lives.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's just like, he comes back because they put someone else's brain in his head. It's so ridiculous. But this ends up helping the show regain the ratings lead with audiences, and Truman seems to return to his routines, except he begins sleeping in his basement, which I want to say one thing that it was a quote that I was so obsessed with. I wrote it down. It was one of Christoph's quotes because I loved so much of what he said. This was a quote that he said during his little interview that just really struck me, and it was, we accept the reality of the world with which we're presented. When they asked him, like, how has Truman not figured it out until now? He was like, because, like, we just accept what's in front of us and we just say that's the reality.
Yeah, you would do the same thing.
Yeah. He was just like, who knows? Maybe this is all happening to you.
He literally never known anything else.
Yeah. Like, this is his life. Like, it's a messed up imitation of life, but it is his life.
So disingenuous. I mean,
yeah.
The only real people are Truman and Christoph.
Yeah, and Sylvia.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's it.
And Sylvia.
Yeah.
No, everyone else is
Everyone bad. Else is totally fake. Like, 100%.
Oh my God, it's horrible.
And I wanted to see more about Marlon, too, because in that conversation where, you know, it ends up being that Marlon, like, found his dad and reintroduces him, I was like, either Marlon is a fantastic actor, or he was actually, like, in pain saying the words, the last thing I would ever do is lie to you,
yeah.
to Truman. Because you saw like pain on his face when he was saying it, and he almost didn't say it. He like took a breath first and then like forced it out, kind of.
Yeah, but I'm sure he feels
terrible. Wholeheartedly yeah. believe he was an actor. I don't believe that he cared for Truman at all. Because immediately after you saw the I would never lie to you, or the next shot with Marlon, it was him looking for Truman, and he was taking direct orders from Christoph and like relaying back to him everything
well, yeah,
that he
but
was.
Yeah, so was everybody else. Marlon's been doing this just as long, or nearly as long as Truman has. He's yeah. grown up with Truman, so he
right,
again,
but
he only knows this world.
I don't know. I just the vibes that I was getting from him, and maybe, and I could be wrong, and it could be open to interpretation.
Yeah.
But I totally took away from it that he was. That he was like super in on it and like didn't really care for Truman.
Yeah, I thought the vibe that I got from Marlon was that he he worked, you know, he worked for Kristoff and all that. But again, like Danielle said, they said that they'd known each other since the, like, the sixth grade.
He said something like, I've known you since you were seven.
Yeah.
So it's been 23 years that they have been best friends.
I feel like the way that everything played out, I felt like at least part of Marlin cared about Truman. Yeah, that's what it seemed like to me.
Yeah, I definitely feel like he likes him.
He definitely likes him better than Meryl.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm gonna say that a true friend would.
Well, I mean, no.
Would tell.
Yeah.
The truth.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying.
Like, but that's the whole thing. Marlin was never a true friend. Yeah, exactly. He was a written-in friend.
Yeah, like he may have felt guilty to just say such a blatant, the last thing I would ever do is lie to you, and someone else just fed him that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sure like the pain came from like, oh, this is awful. Like, I hate having to do these things.
I hate having to like lie to this person who thinks I'm being genuine. Yeah, like
when I'm totally not.
Yeah, and there's so many ways to take that. But I mean, it's something that, again, we can only speculate about it, just like the whole Meryl thing. We can only like think about, did he actually care about Truman or was it all just a complete act? Like, I have no clue, but it's so fascinating to think about. The other thing I wanted to bring up that it kind of glossed over, the whole conversation between Kristoff and Sylvia during the interview when she calls in, the part that gutted me the most was when he's like, no, I'll talk to her. And then he says when she's about to hang up, he knows her name. He has addressed her by her name, but then he just goes, and so, call her, and just like moves on, like finishing his sentence. And I was just like, you really did just put her in her place like that.
I don't think human people mean too much to Kristoff.
No, they clearly do not. In any
capacity.
They are like toys. They are dolls in a dollhouse, and he just moves them around wherever he wants them to go.
Yeah.
Oh god. I mean,
even his workers kind of know what he's doing is a little screwed up, because during the storm sequence, the guy's like, crank up the wind, and he's like, I can't do that. He's still a person. He could die.
Well,
yeah.
You see,
and he would rather him die than escape.
Well, you see that the motto that he's been feeding all of his workers, and you assume the world, is love him, protect him. Because you see, that's the motto on like a couple of the workers' like shirts, and it shows it very clearly. And so like that whole final thing goes completely against the motto that he's been feeding to them, where he's been like, you know, he is precious, he is innocent, we have to protect his like ability to live a totally like normal, uninterrupted by the outside world life. And but then he does this and makes them all do this. And it's like, it's just so jarring. They're all like, what, wait, you've been telling us this different thing. And now this is all about you. Yeah. Like, they've been fed this lie that it's all about protecting the innocence of a human.
It's like that meme of the astronaut, the two astronauts, and he's looking at the world and he's all like, wait, this is always all about you. And Kristoff behind him holding the gun, like, it always was.
The whole world is just Nebraska.
Oh my goodness. Yes. But yeah, that's like, oh my gosh, I love everything. It's so
good.
Here's
a fun game. We're all professional actors. So we're in the world of the Truman Show.
Okay.
Truman Show is the thing. It's been on for 10 years. We'll say it's been on for 17 years, okay. Right? Truman's 17 at this point. It's integrated into the world. It's part of the cultural zeitgeist. How much money do they how much money would they have to pay you to continue on the lie and have you be like Truman's friend?
Like be like Marlin?
Either like Marlin or like a supporting role, like the two guys, like a role that has like speaking roles, but is a friend to him, like the guy who sold him the newspapers, for example.
Yeah.
Or the neighbors or something like that, or like Marlin, because of course the pay goes up the closer you get to him.
I don't trust myself to be able to hold a commitment like that, and here's why. I change my mind about everything all the time. you can ask Samuel. I'll say something one day, and then 2 days later, I completely contradict what I had said. And he's like, wait, but I thought you thought this thing. And I'm like, nah, I changed my mind. And it happens all the time. And so I don't trust myself to be able to convince myself, okay, this is fine for $50 million. They're going to make me be his best friend. This is fine. But then, like, a week later, I would have changed my mind. I would have been like, nah, I'm going to tell him. The check went through. I'm going to tell him. Like, I would have been the Sylvia. I would have been like, all right, the check is officially in my account. Great. I'm going to tell this guy. Like, I would absolutely be a little mole.
Yeah, I think I not to get too crazy with it, right, and too far down this hypothetical rabbit hole, because that's all it is just a hypothetical. But when you look at it from a business standpoint, like a theoretical business idea model as to how this world kind of functions, one would assume that there are contracts in place saying, hey, if you try and break the illusion, we sue you for double what we paid you. So, or something to that effect, right, you know what I mean? Like financial ruin is in your future if you break the terms of this contract. And given how embedded into the world and the way of life that the Truman Show has clearly demonstrated itself to be, one would argue probably not winning that court case. So, so you're literally faced with, you know, do you want to risk, ruining your life over shattering the illusion? Or make a little bit of money from essentially being, you know, sacrificing your morals.
I don't think I would take it in the first place. And it's not even necessarily because of the moral or financial stuff, but just because of the time commitment necessary. I mean, that would require giving up your life.
Yeah, because you have to live there.
Like, and that's not something that I would be interested in doing.
That's very
20 million doesn't want to give you the life?
Nope.
No, I think it would be a thing that I go back and forth on. And I think if I ever did say, like, okay, I'll be his friend, and I was like, well, I can't break it to him, I might just, like, not be as sneaky, like, about hiding things as other people were. So it's not like I was telling him.
Yeah.
But it's just, maybe I'm not that great at my job, and so I slip up a little bit, like, where it can be argued that it was just, like, a mistake. Yeah. I feel like that's what I would end up doing, is if I were to do it, that's what I would do, to kind of be sneaky sneaks.
John, Russell?
I would do it on one condition, if I could move several people with me.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, if they could, like, you know, like, obviously there's a lot of land in the area that Truman hasn't, like, you know, explored, because he doesn't, like, leave the city a whole lot. Like, I would do it if I could have, like, my people there, you know what I'm saying? Like, if I could have, you know, like, my girlfriend there and, you know, like, a couple others, I'd be like, yeah, you know, like, if I'm going to be living here full time, you need to make this a house.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, remember, keep in mind, right? The comment about, you know, this, you know, we have the population of a small country here. Just because you're on the Truman Show as a supporting character, as the best friend, as the whatever, that doesn't mean you're on camera 100% of the time. Yeah, there may be a couple of days that go by.
The newspaper guy, he's on every day for 10 minutes.
Yeah. And then he can go about his life for the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm. And you know that they have green rooms, you know, and different stuff, like, inside of the dome. So they probably have, like, little workers' villages there, like, where all the staff kind of lives with their family. So I think it's well within reason to be, you know, to be able to have your family and your livelihood. And, you know, they probably have a Starbucks or something in the village. You know, like, yeah. This is the really awesome thing about this movie is the fact that, just conceptually alone, just based off of the concept that they showed you and the little peeks behind the curtain that they've shown you throughout the movie, I already can tell you, like, how most of these things work, just based off of the really rich concept and a little knowledge of film stuff. But, like, you're able to put together, like, the logistics of how all of these things work, and that is so cool.
Yeah,
for such a short, you know, relatively short movie, to be able to build such an explicitly oh my god kind of world, like, that's just so cool, man.
Yeah, it's there's just so much to talk about, but I'm gonna move on so that we can, like, get to, you know,
oh, sure.
So one night, Truman secretly disappears through a makeshift tunnel in his basement, forcing Christoff to temporarily suspend the broadcast for the first time in its history. Audiences around the world are captivated by this unexpected event and tune in record numbers. Christoff orders a citywide search for Truman and is soon forced to cue the sun and break the production's day-night cycle to optimize the search. Which just, like, the more that he cracks and starts making concessions for his art, like, it's when, like, I feel like the true madness starts to set in, is, like, this idea of this fear of literally losing a, well, I say it's his life's work, but, I mean, it's a life's work, you know? And it's just, oh gosh, the way he starts making concessions and being like, no, everyone has to go out and search for him. And they're like, well, won't he notice that? He's like, no, we're going to find him. And then he's like, you know what? Bring up the sun. And everyone's like, it's 3 a.m. Like, why is the sun up?
We can't do that.
Like, what are you talking about? It's so, like, crazy watching him slowly kind of, like, just completely lose his sanity over this. And I love it. But he brings up the sun. Christoff soon discovers Truman sailing away from Sea Haven on a small boat, having conquered his fear of water. After resuming the transmission, Christoff creates a violent storm in an attempt to capsize the boat. After nearly drowning Truman but failing to break his spirit, Christoff ends the storm. Truman continues to sail until his boat pierces the wall of the dome, which that moment I love because you don't see it coming. It looks like he's just going to float on and then bam, he hits a wall. Like, it's so,
tears through the
it's so funny and crazy and I love it.
There's also my favorite line in the entire movie was during the storm scene where he looks up at the sky and just screams, "You're going to have to kill me."
I know.
Like,
I just,
that got me. That was the line for me that just really got me.
No, you know what got me was he was like, I wrote this down too. Sorry, I'm trying to remember the exact thing, but someone else said to him, you know, like, we need to cut the stream. He can't die in front of an audience. And he just goes, he was born in front of a live audience.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh my God. Like, he didn't care. Yeah. He was just like, this is art. This is my art. If it ends this way, it ends this way. Mm-hmm. Like, at least it's me controlling how it ends.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh my God. Like, that part got me. I had to write that down. So initially horrified, Truman discovers a nearby staircase leading to an exit door, which I will say, I also wrote down how much I loved his moment of touching the wall, because he just kind of lets out this little, like, oh, because that is the first thing, aside from, like, Sylvia, that he has ever tangibly touched that also exists in the outside world. Everything else is just in Truman's world and is, like, you know, like a specific object.
Yeah.
Like a specific thing that he touches and he's like, this is, like, this is the border. This is where, like, I can actually get out. Like, I did it. And it's just this great moment. I love it so much. But he contemplates leaving his world, and so Christoff speaks directly to Truman through a speaker system and tries to persuade him to stay, claiming that there is no more truth in the real world than in his artificial one, where he would have nothing to fear. After a moment of reflection, Truman says his catchphrase. Would you like to deliver it for us, Russell?
Sure. And if I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
And then he bows to his audience and he exits. The viewers celebrate his escape and Sylvia races to go find him. Defeated, Christoff's supervisors finally end the program on a shot of the open exit door. Truman's fans, the viewers of the show, cheer upon his successful escape. And then after transmission ceases, ask what else is on television.
It's so awesome.
I just
because America is filled with a bunch of degenerates in this world.
It's so satisfying. What? Like, that he like, makes it out, like sails all the way, almost dies like in the sea, like like conquers this, like, his fear.
It's the logical trial, you know.
And then like climbing like the blue like staircase to open the door, like just the first time like I watched that, it felt so surreal.
Yeah,
I was just like, this like just took a weird turn, like like it just felt, it almost felt like a what's the word? I'm gonna blank on it completely. So someone else say something.
Well, I was just gonna say that final moment to me, at first it confused me because I was like, Christoff, you know, your art this whole time has been this innocent person not realizing that the world they're in isn't the real one. So you get to just present them with a what you think is a better version of what's out there. And so that art has already been destroyed. Truman knows, but he's still trying to get him to turn around and stay. And that whole last thing really just seemed like two, you know, men experiencing madness, just trying to force their final, like, will on each other, specifically Kristoff, just being like, you know, like, yes, you know, my art is done, but if I can get him to turn around, then that means this whole thing was a success. And it means right. that I did present him with a better version of what's out there, and he's gonna choose me. And instead he doesn't. And it's just this moment of realizing that you can't play God, like, not with a human soul, not with a spirit, like, that the human spirit is stronger than your sense of control and what you're allowed to do with, you know, with a person's free will, essentially. And I just, oh, I love it so much that he sits there and he thinks he's got it. He thinks Truman's about to turn around, and like he's talking out of the sky like he's God. And instead Truman's just like, all right, goodbye. And just like walks right out. Oh, yeah. I love it so much. And especially just like the snippet of the two guys being like, yeah, you know, what else is on? And just immediately click over. It's such a like gut punch to Kristoff and his idea that the world would like fall apart without this one piece of art he's created. The world couldn't go on because they have all placed so much love and need in the Truman Show. But the second it's gone, everyone's just like, okay, what's next? Like, moving on. Yeah, and it's such a, like, oh my gosh.
I feel like that's an interpretation, but another interpretation too could be not that he feels like the world's going to fall apart, but he's also painfully aware of how fickle the populace that's watching this is. And then if he can't keep them engaged, if he can't keep them focusing on the screen, he will lose them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh my
God. So it's their what's the word? It's their apathy towards his plight and what he's doing that he's kind of fighting against, which is just, it's like, oh my God, it was their sense of gimme, 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 what's in front of my face, like give me entertainment now, that built the empire that he was able to kind of create. And it's that same sense of consumeristic gimme, gimme right now that was his downfall, essentially, which is really cool.
No, I love it. But that is the Truman Show. So what would you guys rename this one?
A good movie.
Good movie.
Good movie. Come watch, please. It's good.
I love this movie.
I have a couple. One of them I just thought of, which would just be a live studio audience. And then the other one is, and this is a little more of me trying to be artsy, but it would be good afternoon, good evening, and just a hyphen.
Ooh, I'm going to borrow the title from one of my favorite albums of all time. It's the Hoosiers. It's a Hoosiers album. Because I think it fits really, really perfectly, and I'm gonna call it The Illusion of Safety.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm gonna borrow from another name that I think is appropriate for this. I'm gonna call it the Sea Haven Prison Experiment.
Ooh.
Oh,
that was along the lines of what I was thinking, was like the something experiment.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out what that word would be.
The American Experiment.
John?
I'm kidding.
America.
You did this, people.
I would probably rename this film The Breaking of the Fourth Wall.
All right.
Ooh, nice.
I like that. Samuel?
That was a lot of,
well, yeah, because he literally narrative. Broke the fourth wall.
Yeah, he literally awesome. Broke it.
Yeah, it has a lot of narrative power like at the end.
Yeah.
Yay. Well, you can just use one of Danielle's.
Take one of mine.
I'm not gonna throw one out there because what Russell gave was what I was what I would have renamed it, essentially, was something, the something experiment, and there's a word there somewhere.
Well, what's the word?
I don't know. That's the issue.
Is it Greece?
Yeah.
I knew Grace was the word.
No, you know what the word is?
Oh my gosh.
The bird.
The bird.
No, do not. Filth. I hate it.
All right. I hope y'all haven't been looking at my screen because I definitely just had all of the answers up. So y'all have to look away.
Cool.
I definitely did not see anything.
Okay, well, first off,
I can just cheat in private.
Well, first off, so I went on Amazon. The general consensus by viewers is really good. 82% rated it 5 stars. I have
That's the correct opinion.
I took a bunch of reviews because they were odd. Like, they were weird reviews. I took a few positive reviews and then a couple of negative reviews. I don't have to read all of them, but I'll kind of give you the gist and you can let me know what you want to hear. So this is a positive one where it was like the parent was like, this is how I relate to my kid. There was one that was all about how the Truman Show predicted the future. There was one that was that was more of a this one is more of like a classic positive review, you know, just talking about how great it was. And then the negative reviews, I'll just read those when I get there. So which of those positives you can hear?
Let's hear the predicting the future one, because that one sounds insane.
Okay, so this is from Michael Griswold, and it's titled, The Truman Show Saw the Future. This was in 2017.
Not a character from something?
I don't know.
Michael Griswold?
I mean, the Griswold family was from the
Vacation series.
Yeah, Christmas Vacation. So this one goes, The Truman Show is another one of these, comedic drama roles that Jim Carrey had in the late 1990s that moved him beyond his slapstick characters, Dumb and Dumber, Mask, and Ace Ventura, as he stars as Truman. And then he kind of just goes over a bunch of stuff and then he says, as I was watching The Truman Show, I couldn't help but notice the parallels with today's world, which has seemingly become saturated with reality television and this sort of fame cult. We are possibly coming very close to the line where something like The Truman Show isn't as outlandish. Cameras are seemingly everywhere, reality television is everywhere, and the line between real life and television and the movies is becoming blurry. A very good movie, but more than a little scary if you look beyond the face. 4 stars.
Actually not entirely wrong.
No, I didn't think so.
And he's not even talking about rapidly approaching. I mean, a very, very strong argument can be made that it's not even that, like, it's predicting the future like we're getting close to it. I would argue to a lesser degree, we're there now. I mean, the advent of social media and your phones and the YouTubes, and I mean, look at what we're doing.
The YouTubes.
No, seriously, look at what we're doing. We're a bunch of people attempting to vie for the attention of others. And that's literally just when you put it down there. I mean, I love what we do. What we do is great. But it's not just what we do. It's what everybody else does. You know, listeners at home, your favorite podcasts and YouTube videos and, you know, Spotify, you know, underground artists that you've listened to there. It's all the same thing, you know, and it's getting more and more and more and more congested, not just by the famous people, but by the populace as a whole.
Well, I have some very incorrect, negative reviews. I'm just going to read one of them though.
I love that you said incorrect.
I mean, it's definitely incorrect, but, so the username is just the letter B. And it says, it's titled, I don't understand why people like this movie. The entire premise is creepy and quite frankly horrible. There is no resolution to this film. He gets out, but then what? Those in charge essentially kidnapped, imprisoned, and brainwashed him while making a fortune doing so. The entire world enjoyed watching it. I spent the entire movie just hoping to see him escape and what would happen then, but instead it just ends with him walking out of a strange black door. Everything up to that point wasn't worth the trouble. It was just strange and almost infuriating to watch. I won't watch it again. I won't recommend it to anyone. 1 star.
Wow.
So they did not understand the assignment.
I was gonna say, talk about someone who's missing the point.
Yeah,
this person like wrote a negative review that where the majority of it was based in the fact that he disagreed with what Christoph was doing, which is the point.
It's the whole point of the movie.
Man, I hope that the bad guy was bad. You know, if I were Christoph, if I was the bad guy, I wouldn't be the bad guy. I'd be the good one. It was like very, very insightful, B. I'm proud of you.
It was just so crazy. Like, what was his problem was so interesting. But, all right, y'all have to look away now because now we're... No. Russell, look at your phone or something. Okay. All right. So, critically on Rotten Tomatoes, what do you guys think this is rated?
I think this is rated 91%.
Okay.
It's got to be high. I'm going to say 87%.
Okay.
Damn you, Russell. I will say 83.
Okay.
I will say 89.
Sam, you were the closest. It's a 95.
There we go. Get out of here. Yeah. That's awesome. I'll take my cynical ass back to the... Okay. That's
and
awesome.
Now, same thing, Rotten Tomatoes, but the audience score.
I think audience score is actually going to be a little lower. I'm going to say it's 84.
Okay.
I'm going to say about the same. I'm going to say 87.
Okay.
90.
Okay.
I'm going to stick to my guns and say 89 again.
John, you were right on the dot. It was going to be Tyler, but you hit right on the dot. It was 89.
How dare you?
How dare you?
I'm done.
And the IMDb score out of 10.
8.6.
Okay.
I'm going to say 9.2. Actually, you know what? That's a little high. 8.3.
Okay. And you said 8.2.
You said
9.2. You said
9.2.
Okay.
9.13.
Okay.
I'm going to go with 9.3.
It's definitely Samuel. Yeah. It's an 8.1.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's a little lower than you think.
Yeah. Well, because I'm sure there are plenty of people who said, oh, yeah, this was a really good movie. 7.5 stars out of 10.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. So the budget for this movie was $60 million, and it made $264.1
million. Nice.
It was an absolute smashing success. It was great. So I got a bunch of fun facts here. So interestingly, Ed Harris and Jim Carrey never met during the filming process.
Nice.
Yeah, they never met.
Wow.
Yeah. In an early scene, this is just an interesting kind of little, like you said, nonverbal storytelling. In an early scene, a bottle of vitamin D is on Truman and Meryl's kitchen table, needed for those without exposure to the real sun.
Nice.
That's
yeah.
So cool.
It's just a little like Easter egg, if you notice
that.
You notice
that. Out of here. That's awesome.
Yeah, because as we see, when he brings up the sun, he has never experienced the real sun.
What?
Yeah.
That's a really good point.
Mm-hmm. The Trumania bit where Truman draws on the mirror with soap and is like, you know, pretending to be an astronaut. It was just Jim Carrey improvising. And in another take, he drew like long curly hair and a dress and was a totally different character. So that was just him messing around and then being like, cool, Jim Carrey, just do whatever you want for 5 minutes.
which is why we hired you.
Do whatever you want for 2 hours. So this film is actually studied in media ethics courses, particularly focusing on the characters of Kristoff, best friend Marlon, and the quote-unquote prostituting of Truman's wife, Meryl. Because that was something, you know, that, like, obviously she signed on knowing that was going to happen. So it wasn't, like, anything, you know, really, like, crazy. But it is interesting to think about that she doesn't even really, like this person.
Nope.
But she, like, has to do this, and yep. It's just like it, and they were even planning on having a baby, like,
yeah.
It's just, oh, it's so crazy,
which is why the movie had to be shot in California, because pornography is legal.
Hey.
But another one was, according to a 2008 New York Times article, psychologists in Britain and the U.S. reported a number of people experiencing Truman Syndrome, or the Truman Show delusion, the belief that they are the unwitting star of their own reality TV show. Reportedly, many afflicted specifically mentioned the film in therapy. More recently, in September 16th of 2013, the detailed account of one Ohio student who suffered for years from the Truman Show delusion was documented in the New Yorker magazine article Unreality Star by Andrew Marantz. So this is something that a lot of people experience, apparently, where they think they are Truman.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
I was gonna say, like, this very well could be like someone's worst fear.
Yeah,
is like at the age of like 30, like, or 40, you know, like, or even like younger, like 17, like 16. Like, imagine if, you know, you just turned 17 and you figure out that your whole life was fake and everyone around you is a paid actor and no one has ever been genuine to you your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
no,
that's so scary, man.
No, there was something I didn't write down, but I think it's interesting. So Peter Weir wanted Jim Carrey from the get-go. Like, you know, he considered Robin Williams as well, but Jim Carrey was his first choice. And originally the script had called for like a teenager. And so this was going to be more about like a teenager discovering their reality. But I like that they chose to go with an older actor because it takes it from like the teenage angst like thing to like midlife crisis. And I think that's far more fitting for this. Something I didn't write down, but I just thought was interesting. Kind of going off of that last point is this next one. A psychiatrist shared in that same year that that article was published, he had met 5 schizophrenic patients and heard of another dozen who believed that their lives were reality television shows.
Hey, everybody, it's me again. That last fun fact kind of fell apart. So we lost a bunch of audio in between these couple of fun facts, and they're really interesting, so I wanted to actually specify them. So the end of that last one about the schizophrenic patients, it continued to say, one patient climbed the Statue of Liberty, believing that his high school girlfriend would be at the top, which was the key to him being able to leave the show. So that was really interesting. This was another really interesting one that we're going to pop back in kind of in the middle of. So Peter Weir had planned for projectionists to stop the film at one point during all screenings, cut to video shot by cameras installed in every theater, then cut back to the movie. So that was pretty cool.
Even more, really freak everybody out. He really wanted to freak everybody in the theaters out by just clicking to them.
Here's a fun fact. When Roger Ebert, you know, the very famous film reviewer, reviewed the film, he not only gave it 2 thumbs up, but he gave an on-air apology to Jim Carrey for saying that he would never have a career.
Yes, I did see that one.
Wow.
Yeah, because after Ace Ventura, he was like, this guy's not going to have a career. But when he saw this movie, he like straight up was like, well, I was wrong. Like, this guy's amazing.
I respect that. It's hard to admit that you're wrong. Like, that's actually kind of that. No, seriously, like that's actually really like big of him to say that. That's pretty cool.
Y'all started freaking out before I finished the point, but it said to make things even more meta, he had even considered playing Christoph himself. The director had.
That's really cool. Had been as good of a performance, but that would have been interesting.
It would have been really crazy that like the director was the actual director of the Truman Show. Like that would have been crazy. And this one ties in with our last movie that we reviewed. The basic story of a man unknowingly being forced to live in an alternate reality is identical to the plot of the 1959 sci-fi novel Time Out of Joint by Philip K. Dick. So I just thought that was an interesting tie together.
Another Philip K. Dick novel.
Yeah.
That's a nope.
I thought that was really cool. And this actually I didn't write down, but they had considered making the town that he lived in look more like New York. But instead, they just decided again. They decided to go with like a small town because they didn't want it to be too sci-fi. And they felt like if it was set in like a big city, that's how it would come across.
I remember reading that because I remember watching a video about the Truman Show the other day, and they were talking about how originally it was supposed to be set in like really rainy, like kind of dark, like black, gray, and white kind of color scheme. Not black and white, but like just like really like monochromatic color scheme.
Very noir.
Yeah, almost noir-esque kind of New York. And then they're just like, ooh, but what if it wasn't that? Because that's too depressing. And then they switched it up.
Yeah, they just really wanted it to be more psychological and less sci-fi. That was like Peter's whole thing. Which, he was like, I don't want it to be too sci-fi.
Which I love the choice to make it very colorful and like, it, you feel like you're on the set of a sitcom. Like, it's
very impressive.
And plays into his whole like I created a better world thing, you know.
Yeah, because he objectively it was
like a dark world, you know.
Wild.
So now we can recast. Who would we be in this movie?
Ooh, this is a good one. I mean, whoever gets cast as Truman, like, needs to, you know, be prepared for some sauce.
Got to bring the sauce.
Oh, wait.
Russell, I
do this. Russell is Marlin.
I was just gonna say Russell is Marlin for sure.
Well, because the beer. No, I was gonna say maybe we could do this in a different way. Maybe we could cast someone as Truman, and the rest of us play the people that are pretending to be fake.
I think Danielle would be the best Truman.
Oh, that's so nice.
That just means you get gaslighted for.
I get gaslighted for 30 years.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking about it. I mean, it's without question, all of us would be able to do a decent job of it. But I think of us, I think you would probably be the best. I think Russell would be good Marlowe.
I think Tyler would be Kristoff.
Yes, oh, Tyler would be a really good Kristoff.
Okay, hear me out. Hear me out. If we're doing a gender bend where Danielle is playing Truman, I think Samuel would be a really good wife character.
I was going to say, I want Sam in the showrunner's position. Oh, I want Sam to be the showrunner.
Wait,
the guy that's like, not Kristoff, the guy that's basically like the first AD.
Oh,
the
Paul director. Giamatti?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that he was in that, by the way. I'm a huge fan.
Like, yeah. As I was watching, I was like, I feel like this is something that I would love to see Samuel do. Like, specifically, like,
yeah.
The torn moment in the storm, I was just like, oh my god, I want to see that. Like, that I was specifically that. What I thought.
I could absolutely see that. And the thing is, I could see John in that role, too. I could see John as the wife.
Yeah, I could see John in that role, too.
I don't know. Yep. I think the dynamic... Kind of what I
was thinking for John was the Paul Giamatti character.
Well, that actually makes that also makes a lot of sense. We could shift him over there.
I was gonna say we could probably. I mean, me and Samuel could both be arguably interchanged for Merle and Simeon or the Paul Giamatti character. Merle
and Marlo.
Merle.
Wow. What other characters?
No, but I agree though. If we did like a gender bend. I think you could do really well with the place of Meryl for sure.
Yeah.
Have just that strained, like, everything's fine. Like, this is all fine.
Oh, well then we need to make, Tyler, the, what's her name? The,
Lauren.
Tyler's gotta be
Kristoff. Tyler's
gotta be Kristoff.
Hey, but someone has to be the other one.
We can't leave that role out.
Yeah, we can.
But...
All right. Well, let's spread it out through the other mad artists. Because I think
other love interest is Brett.
Yeah,
Brett is Sylvia.
So honestly, though, he could play that kind of like rebellious, yeah. Like, hey, we got to get out of here, and the panic attack scene where she's freaking out and the guy's trying to gaslight Truman and say that he's schizophrenic. Like that would be Brett would murder that.
I will
and
say,
and Sam Marie would be the mother who just is so obvious, so annoyed with everybody else all the time about having to do this because she has probably had to like. That's a character we never mentioned who fascinated me because
the mom.
She was so obviously just done with this whole thing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Like you could tell that she had devoted 30 years of her life to this and she had to raise this guy who was not her own kid.
She was
stuff
like a,
and she
like
was just so done
Shakespeare actor before this and she's just like, oh my god, can I just like do something fun please? Like this sucks. No, I will say if we're not doing a gender bend thing, I also think Sam Marie could murder Meryl.
Yeah,
I think she could do that.
I agree.
Yeah, that
wouldn't even have to be a gender bend.
Do that really well, but yeah, she's not here, so
right.
So regardless, it doesn't matter. So favorite and least favorite moments of this one.
My favorite moment, hands down. I mean, of course, the ending climax is like super super cool, but just that moment where he looked up at the sky and says, "You're gonna have to kill me." I don't know why that affected me as much as it did, but like that was the most badass and incredible and moving and compelling line/scene in the show, where you thought like he almost like, or and then he just completely wrecks the ship and almost kills him was just it's très magnifique.
My favorite scene was when he's driving the car to try and escape.
I was going
to
say same.
That's a really good, one.
Is my favorite. And I don't know that I have a least favorite.
Yeah, my favorite is definitely specifically just, I love the moment where he goes, you know what? You're right. Let's go home. And he whips around and he's just going so fast in reverse. And he's like, I don't know what I was thinking. Yes, let's go home. And he goes, you know what? No. And goes back down and he's and like, look, same road, no cars. Like, I love it so, so, so much where he's like figuring it out. I love it. I love it. I love it.
It's great.
I mean, I don't know. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I apologize. I hate throwing I don't know. I feel like it's almost a little, and not to call you out, Samuel, I feel like it's a little bit of a cop-out to say that I don't have a least favorite, but I genuinely do not have one.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of something that I didn't like.
Like something that I didn't like as much as the other bits, I guess I would say the second conversation that he had with Marlin.
Oh, yeah, actually, you know what? That'll be my least favorite. Was the whole bringing
for like a split second, but not really. But I guess in comparison, everything else. My favorite
was actually bringing the dad back because it didn't play into anything at all. Like it felt like this whole okay Truman's back thing, but then it turned out to just not be the case. But they never explored anything with that.
I guess that's fair. I guess that would have to be my least favorite if I had one. Would just be like the dad returning just to essentially like keep him from exposing everything, and then like you said, nothing really comes of it.
Yeah,
he just. Like, pretends to be back to normal. So I guess that would have to be like if I had a least, but it's not even like I hated that.
Right.
Because, you know, it sounds like just, you know, them being like, okay, back to normal, business as usual. Let's not worry about the dad. He can do whatever he wants.
Like, which was kind of the whole point, which was that, you know what I mean? Like the whole point was to articulate that just like a sitcom, this big moment in Truman's life, it's only but so meaningful for so long. Because there was a time skip, right? So, you know, when as you get a little further along in the time skip, you end up realizing, that really big and powerful and emotional moment just doesn't, it's just not valid anymore, you know?
Yeah. It wore down.
Which was pretty cool, you guys.
What about you, Russell?
My favorite moment for sure is the moment in the kitchen when he's like having like a mild like a freak out, like everything like is kind of like just going to hell, and then Meryl starts doing an advertisement.
Oh my gosh, she's like, yes. Try Mo
Coco.
Fresh
cocoa beans from Nicaragua.
And he just goes, what does that have to do with anything?
What are you talking about?
Fascinating fun fact. So the Peter Weir, the director, wanted Jim Carrey. But the studio offered the role to Samuel Jackson, who turned it down.
What?
Yep.
Samuel Jackson? That would have been such a different movie.
Wow, that would have been wild.
That would have been such a different movie.
At that point, they should go with the really dark, like, noir thing, I feel like.
Yeah.
I mean, but even the thought of having it go to Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Like, God, I mean, that would have been an incredible movie. Like,
because he and Jim Carrey are so similar in their styles of comedy and in like, and especially in their like, you know, in
wacky rubberiness
as well. Yeah. And they're so good at accessing that darkness and that drama that, I mean, I think he would have killed it, but I also loved Jim Carrey's portrayal. Like, I'm not unhappy with it in the slightest.
That's my favorite, but it's my favorite not just because it's crazy and funny, but also because like it triggers a huge like break in like his life, and he's just like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I feel like I'm going crazy, and like it really is when you like it starts to unravel for him mentally is like that moment, because he's just like, what are you talking about? What is going on right now? And he yells her, and you see her jump, and it's just like, ooh.
Like,
it's so tense. It's great. I love that moment.
Yeah.
And then I think my least favorite one, this is kind of like random, but like, I'm not super in love with a whole bunch of like the random like side cuts to people like watching. Like, I love the bar stuff. I love the two guys in the machine shop and all of the bathtub. And of course, I love Sylvia because, you know, she's so important.
Yeah.
But like, there were like a couple like other like random cuts like to people watching that I just felt really like unnecessary and kind of like pulpy and like stupid to me, and I was like, we could have left those out.
There is a deleted scene that makes it clear that Marlin truly cares about Truman and finds him during the search and lets him go.
What?
Oh, really?
I wish they left that in.
You've seen that.
I'm glad that they didn't. I'm glad that they didn't, because I honestly think that would have been more impactful. Or I think it's more impactful that we didn't see that.
I agree.
To make it feel like
Truman, like, you know, doing this all for himself, and it's not someone else like giving him permission, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I do agree with that.
Because I think the validation at the very end was the audience clapping when he escaped.
Yeah. Johnny boy, what about you?
Actually, Russell brought about that moment with the fourth wall advertisement, and I had one, but I think that takes the cake because I just love the fact that Truman looks around like, "What are you looking at? Like, what? Who are you talking to?" And my least favorite moment, and it's not because it's a bad moment, but just because as an audience member, it hit. And it hurt is whenever you realize Marlon is getting fed his lines from Kristoff on what to say to keep him in the like in the scene, like right before his dad comes back. Yeah. And it's like, oh man, he's really by himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just heartbreaking, man.
Well, out of 10 cans of Mo Coco, what would you rate the Truman Show?
10 out of 10.
I was actually going to agree. I genuinely, like, even just that one thing, you know, pulling a least favorite is so hard. Like, this is absolutely a 10 out of 10 movie for me. Yeah. Like, no question.
I'm going to rate it. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm going to go 10 out of 10 as well. Like, I hate, like to jump on the bandwagon. Like, I thought about doing 9.5 just to be different, but, like, this movie is a 10 out of 10. I struggle to find anything that I don't like about it, aside from, like I mentioned, like those few like random like cuts to people watching that I just felt like were unnecessary. They're just like, they could have added a couple more scenes that like added to the plot instead of just being like, oh, you know, here's this random family watching and like, oh, you know, this is how you say his name. And it's like, okay, cool.
Yeah. I mean, I unapologetically, if I'm over here struggling to try and split hairs just to find something to get bothered by, that's how you know this movie's a 10 out of 10.
Exactly.
Which, fun fact for the viewers, since my time of being here, if John gives this a 10 out of 10, this will be the second 10 out of 10 that everybody has unanimously given. And the first one being Vanilla Ice is cool as ice, baby.
Oh my gosh.
Let's go.
Y'all did not.
I think it was for the meme, honestly.
Of course it was for the meme. The second movie in the podcast history that we have actually rated.
Like, non-ironically rated a 10 out of 10, because the other one was Singing in the Rain.
Singing in the Rain.
Yeah.
Don't really appreciate the the non-ironic little part. I don't think that's necessary, personally. You're personally, right. But...
Johnny Boy, what about you?
You know... It has a lovely amount of comedy with just Jim Carrey as an actor and psychotic breaks. It's intense. It's captivating. It's thought-provoking. I cannot, in good conscience, not give this a 10 out of 10.
All right. I was worried.
Welcome to the Pantheon.
For rewatchability, it's a 9.5. That's really what I was expecting.
No, it's thought-provoking. I can't sit there and, like, there's, like, I couldn't think of a truly bad moment in the movie.
Yeah.
And I have to agree with Tyler. If I have to sit there and rake my brain for a truly horrible moment, then was there ever really a truly horrible moment other than me nitpicking the film?
Yeah, exactly. It's just, oh, it's so good. Yeah, highly, highly recommend this if you've never seen it. Everyone, I feel like, should see it at least once. It's incredible. It's, like he said, it's thought-provoking. It's poignant. It really, like, makes you feel things, and it makes you, like, really think. So, yeah, highly, highly recommend it. Do y'all have any final thoughts before we get into the last little blurb here?
I think if you have never seen this movie before, watch it. Even if we just spoiled the plot for you, which it really isn't like a spoil anyway, because, like, what happens is what you want to happen. So, like, yeah, it's very satisfying. Like, just watch it. Like, we can't do it justice by talking about it, because it really is unbelievable, and you need to see it for yourself.
And I would suggest, don't watch it, like, in a party setting.
No.
Watch it. Sit down to watch it.
This is, like, cerebral. Yeah, and you got to treat it as such.
Don't need it to be, like, everyone's, like, you know, drinking or playing a game, and this is in the background movie. That's not what this is. This is a movie that demands your attention and, like, deserves your attention. So, like, definitely, if you're going to watch it either with other people that are going to appreciate it like you, or watch it by yourself. It's an incredible, incredible movie, and everyone should see it. But yeah,
and when you sit
go ahead.
And when you sit, I was just gonna say, and when you sit down to watch it, viewer, kick your feet up, have a drink, you know, relax. You know, you worked hard this week. You earned it. My last thoughts are as follows. I have a huge, huge, huge unapologetic soft spot for movies that really challenge the paradigm that we live in. It's why Jonathan Larson is one of my favorite musical theater people just ever. Like anything that's just like, hey, Americanized like capitalistic culture, not to say that I'm like some crazy socialist, I'm just saying the way we do it specifically, there are some problems and I would like to articulate them. And I think these really, really creative bits of art that really kind of highlight the cracks and the chinks in the armor, are just absolutely just masterfully done and very, very important. And I hope more art like this comes out in the future, which we know it will. So
yeah,
hell yeah.
Well, just a reminder to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Mad Artists Entertainment and on Twitter at artists_mad. A Christmas Carol is going to be being performed. Is that this coming Saturday, the 18th?
That is this coming Saturday.
You know it.
That is December 18th. It's going to be, when this comes out, it'll be just a few days away. It's only $5 to get in. They're going to be serving, y'all are going to be serving Christmassy concessions?
Yep, we're going to have some Christmassy concessions.
Yeah.
And if you can't make it in person, we're going to try and live stream it.
Hey, I didn't know that, but good to know.
We're going to try.
You can certainly try.
We can certainly try.
Do or do not. There is no try.
Well, that is happening on Saturday. We're going to be, you know, doing a stage reading. And Russell, you are going to be doing the onstage Foley. Is that right?
Yes, me. And me and Candace are doing some cool Foley stuff. We have a whole bunch of awesome stuff prepared to make everything sound as realistic as possible. Still struggling with wind. So if anyone has any idea on how to do good wind aside from blowing into a microphone, I guess let us know.
In the 2 days.
I have a few ideas.
But yeah, and there's, of course, so we still have out our first episode of Call of Cthulhu. Whenever we get close to releasing our second one, we will let you know. Tyler, would you like to talk about your thing?
Absolutely nothing would make me happier than to talk about my thing. So I am currently running a project with some of the other mad artists called Forced Comedy. It is a streaming show where we are currently playing Undertale and doing some semi-professional voice work for the characters, as well as just having some fun banter and comedy. It is a lot of fun. You will definitely love it, and we would love to have you.
Well, just the same as the handle is our website. You can visit that for more information about all the stuff we're doing, madartistsco.com. If you have any comments, questions, corrections, or requests that we should review in the future, you can message our social media or just email us at banterbox.madartists@gmail.com. Leave a review wherever you're listening. That helps us out a lot. And we will see you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 I want your blood.
And if I don't see you,
Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Good night, good afternoon, good night, good noon.
And if I don't see morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.